to Awakening Leadership Podcast, where we have conversations with leaders who are doing their part to make the world a better place today and for future generations. Awakening Leadership is about three vital areas of leadership development: self-awareness, social and cultural awareness, and ecological awareness. By awakening and developing in these areas, we enhance our leadership across the board, from vision, values, and strategy to team building and communication, and can stand out in our business and industry. I'm Yolana Shaw, founder of Awakening Leadership Coaching, Consulting, and Training, and the host of this amazing podcast. So today I am super excited to be introducing Ben Killoy. Ben is a Marine veteran, a speaker, and a coach with a focus on helping dads step into their best life. Ben was spending a great deal of time running on the common path in life: transition out of the military, college, get a job, start a family, all towards, in his words, the American dream. In 2014, he dropped out of the College of Engineering and left with a big question: what next? From this point, he reconnected with a love of leadership and a desire to become a better husband and dad and coach. So spending quality time with his family while still working hard and helping others, which really is the dream for most leaders, I think. So Ben now helps other dads who feel successful at work but feel like a doormat when they walk through the door at their home, and he helps them to step into their best life. So welcome to the show, Ben.
Thank you so much for having me on here. I'm really excited about this conversation, because that big question when I dropped out of the College of Engineering, what I figured out was I was actually reignited with a love of leadership that I had from my time serving in the Marine Corps. I had just forgotten it. And it took almost a 10-year period post-transition to really find out that leadership and helping people pull something out that they didn't know was already there, that was something that I did in the Marine Corps. I had just forgotten it. And that was the big answer to that question of, I love leadership and I'm going to become a student of leadership and understand its principles.
I love that, Ben. And I can fully relate personally. My experience in stepping into this leadership space, it's a very interesting, exciting space. I think we both need t-shirts. I love leadership. Yeah, we
could share. That sounds like a great idea. I've never seen one. One of us should. My wife makes t-shirts. I'm going to have her make me one.
Oh my God, how cool is that? So let me ask you the question then, which is very pertinent to what we're speaking about. What exactly does leadership mean to you? What is leadership that you love?
The leadership that I learned to love is recognizing it kind of in twofold. That when you learn to lead yourself, you're actually executing on a layer of leadership that most people overlook. Because to me, leadership is like the most default definition that business and society assign it is, you're a manager, you start leading. And you should just almost automatically be able to identify, and the team should just want to do what you tell them to do. And any manager that's ever been in a managerial position, they know that like there's that point. They're like, why won't they just do what I tell them to do? I'm supposed to be leading, but it doesn't work. Well, leading starts with you leading yourself, and they're probably not doing it because they see something in you that like, I'm not doing it because that guy doesn't do it. And it's that simple point where they're not going to do what you don't do. And the point that I had to learn through the process of becoming a better dad, becoming a better employee, was how you lead yourself is actually what people are looking for. In the military, the best leaders that I knew were the ones that executed on their own life, not just within the unit. They did what they needed to do. They were out there making sure, taking care of their health. They were taking care of their family. They were taking care of the Marines. All of those things, that was what leadership was for me.
Yeah, this is a really powerful point. So tell us a little bit more about that journey from the experiencing leadership in the Marines. Here's a question I have for you, because when I was leaving high school, so, you know, finishing and starting college, university, joining the Army, as we would call it here, is like, or the Navy, like it would be a really long way from anything I would have been interested in doing. So no judgment, but I'm like, I was very much like about saving the environment. I was about world peace. And to my mind then, the military had nothing to do with that. It was almost the opposite end of the spectrum. So I know this is a little bit off topic from our ultimate point, but I'm just curious. I want to know. Take me right back to when you first joined the Marines, and was that interest in leadership living in you then, or what motivated your journey?
So we got to go a little bit before joining the Marine Corps. So for me in high school, the big question I was left with, what do I do? And for me, I wanted computers. Like, that seemed natural. I wanted to do it, but I really wasn't fitting in with the colleges. And I was just like, I felt kind of, I had a lot of self-worth issues. I didn't really feel valuable. I really didn't even know who I was. So I had a, I saw people at college and then I was like, that's not me. And so then I was like, okay, well, I'm not going to go to college. What am I going to do? Okay, well, where else can I learn computers? And I was like, oh, the Air Force is an option. It's pretty easy. They have, it's very highly technical. Go there, go through the process, learn the stuff, and then come out. And I was probably maybe a week away from joining the Air Force. We met with a recruiter. And the day that changed my life was, it was like August probably 26th of 2002, church picnic. And the Marine recruiter had a blow-up bouncy house for the kids. And he had a table there with all this stuff. And I had already crossed Marines off because I was like, I thought they just were a bunch of grunts, that they were only infantry. And I was like, I knew that was not what I wanted to do. My mom was actually worried I wasn't exploring all my options. I was being like irrational. So she goes over and starts talking to him. Next thing you know, I go over and start talking to him. And the next thing you know, I find out, well, they have all the other jobs that everybody else has. It's this big giant military unit and branch. And next thing you know, I'm talking to him in the guidance counselor's office. And 2 weeks later, I'm raising my right hand for the Marine Corps. So it was like this complete 90-degree shift where I didn't even look for the Marine Corps. I wasn't even expecting to be a Marine. I would have been voted least likely to join a Marine. I could barely run a mile. I could barely do a pull-up when I first joined. So for me, it was this idea of stretching. It was almost like my dare to be great moment. That in this moment, I was like, this sounds super scary. This sounds like something I never would have done, never would have saw myself doing. And I just felt right to do it. I didn't really know where it was going to go. But it was one of those that just like, this is the hardest thing that I think I've ever done. Let's do it. And in the next 4 years, like boot camp, it's one of the hardest boot camps in the military, U.S. military. And within that process, I was beat down. I initially went in with the mindset of like, let's hide in the shadows. Let's hopefully no one finds me. And that worked fairly well, but I was still being picked on during those times. And so I still felt like isolated and afraid. And that wasn't leadership. I mean, obviously, anybody that knows that, and as I describe it, that's not leadership. So I was in this mode of like protecting myself from the world around me. And it kind of took the military to kind of beat that down out of me and realize that like I had to rebuild it back up, because there was a pivot point about halfway through where I had an emotional breakdown in boot camp and was starting to cry. And then in that moment, everybody came around me and then started like kind of like the same kind of community. Like when someone's hurting, you make sure everybody's taken care of, and what military units are known for. I had to kind of experience that firsthand. And in that moment, I kind of started to realize that I could do this together in a different way. So I graduated the boot camp, and that was 2003, and transitioned, went through schooling, didn't really start figuring anything else out till I got to Okinawa, Japan. And when I got to Okinawa, Japan, I was the first person in my family. I grew up on a farm in southern Wisconsin. So the idea of a farm boy being stationed in Okinawa, Japan was like a complete foreign world for me. So it was a whole new experience, whole new world of possibilities, just being in new environments, understanding how the environment shapes you. But what I've learned to love within that process is finding other Marines that people had given up on and helping them pull the Marine out of them that they couldn't see themselves. And now that was a critical point that I had to, and I didn't know this until many years later on reflection, is that I had this big epiphany in my head that early in life, whether it be in high school or in boot camp, the people that pushed me down were teaching me a hard lesson, and they are preparing me to be able to pull people up later. And those moments, I learned how to take my mess and help make it my message and help understand what I was really good at, because I was there. I've seen the people that people had given up on. I was me. And this is the part that when you find a really empathetic leader, an empathetic leader most likely has walked in your shoes and can see it on your face before you were even probably recognizing it. And for me, the Marine Corps really taught me that core idea that leadership is leading yourself, understanding how you set your example. But from like a coaching and a peer and mentoring standpoint, you can be the mirror for someone else's value that they can't see. And you can actually give them the gift of being able to walk a path that they can't see of, hey, I see this in you and I'll help you get there. Like that's also leading. But again, it starts with being able to lead yourself. That's a long answer, but that's kind of the whole unpacked story for you.
Thank you. I actually appreciate that in-depth story. And it's amazing, isn't it, how when we hear each other's stories, it just unfolds so much more of the person for us.
It adds so much depth. And depth isn't something we spend a lot of time doing in 2021. But the world needs more depth. And it's even ironic that Americans have the worldly view, but very few of us have actually left America. Most people barely left their own state. And so we need more depth in the world. And that's the one thing the Marine Corps gave me by going to Okinawa. I took a vacation to Australia when I was like my last year in the Marine Corps. So the ideas of like, this isn't just how other people live the world. There are so many different ways that people live life. And that was a depth that I got from the Marine Corps experience as well.
Yeah. And the other thing I appreciate about you sharing your story, Ben, I mean, there's so many themes in there that we could unpack a bit. It sounds like there were things that were difficult in your high school and in the Marine Corps. And I guess we all have those times, this powerful moment of when you really kind of can't go on and you lose it and you show your vulnerability to others. And that, I guess, thing that you've perhaps been avoiding doing for years, that when you finally did is what created the cohesion, the coming together of the group to support you. And that was a gift to you and to the others in the unit, I imagine. So,
because I wasn't the only one suffering. I was just the first one that cracked. So, right. Like, the other part of vulnerability is that when you go first, you give other people permission to go second. So that I execute. That's why I'm always sharing my story, because somewhere out in the world, by me sharing that little story, someone else gets permission to go second, because one, they realize I didn't explode. I'm still here talking. And two, they think like, if he can do it, I can do it. So that, I think that's why it's so important to share stories and be vulnerable. That's what I've learned through the process of all doing all this, because to me, that power is 10 times greater than any other force we have for connection and adding depth and just building a connection to a team, a business to do a big thing or to achieve a big goal. Like experiencing a moment where I don't know if we can do it. Like, to me, those are the moments where you actually come together and like, I think we can now, because we opened up and we shared what we're really thinking about.
Yeah, I love that. I think what you're really talking about here is not leading with empathy as in having empathy while you lead, but actually being the first to be vulnerable or to bring emotional, to be empathetic, and the power of actually literally leading in that space. So awesome. Fantastic.
I think it was John Maxwell that said this, or it was one of my very first leadership CDs that I was listening to on the way to work. And they talked about the worst thing a CEO can do is have, say, a truism that everybody else in the company knows about him, but he's too ignorant to admit openly because he thinks nobody does.
Okay.
And it's that little difference that creates the division of like, you won't do what I tell you. Well, because I know this thing about you that you think that nobody knows, but everybody knows it. And it's those little things that have to be vulnerable. That when you have those little dirty secrets in the shadows, that's what kind of weakens your leadership. To me, leadership is about leading your life in the light. And when you lead it in the light, there's nothing to hide. And when there's nothing to hide, you can focus all of your energy in living in the light. But as long as you're using your ego and keeping things in the shadows to protect yourself or to posture yourself incorrectly to say, I'm supposed to be here because I'm this big CEO, people see right through that. And if people see right through it and you don't acknowledge it, you're always going to have a friction and a misalignment of leadership and energy and focus on what you're trying to achieve as a company.
100%. Wow. So we're getting right to the core of like vulnerable, compassionate or empathetic and authentic leadership. So far, so good. Let's move on to like, how old are your kids? How long have you been a dad?
I have been a dad. I was a dad in March of 2012. And we're coming up on a 9-year mark. So my oldest daughter is 9 years. My son is 6 and a half and my youngest daughter is 4.
Okay, beautiful. I have an 11 and a 14-year-old. So I don't have a lot of dad experience, but I definitely have experience being a mom and a parent. And, you know, what a journey it is to mix leadership and parentship together. So let's talk about that. What's the core of that for you?
Core of that for me is realizing that a lot of business leadership and a lot of parenting leadership is about growing up. That we talk about being professional in the workplace, but really professional is acting like an adult. And we can all think of people in the workplace that like, man, that person's acting like a child. Like that's unprofessional and they're acting like a child. That's a thought that a lot of people have probably at work. well, that growing up that has to happen at work to be professional, to act like an adult, to be calm and be rational with your emotions, that is the exact same stewardship you need in your life at home. And it's 10 times pressured at home. Like, being a parent is sometimes like living in an Instapot. And your life is always under pressure. You're always being tested and your emotions are always being just overwhelmed sometimes. But that exercise, like, I'm a big believer. I read this in a book by Hal Runkle recently, that parenting isn't about kids. It's actually about us. It's about us growing up and learning to calm down and represent the best version of ourselves to our kids for them to go out in the world and become the best version of themselves. Isn't that what we do at work? To show up at work as the best version of ourselves so that our team sees that, so they go, our company grows and we go out and do big things. It's so similar, yet so many people just miss the mark and that, like, they try to separate it. Like, I have to have my work hat on and my dad hat on. It's the same hat. It just applies the same principles in different ways and changing up a few words. But a lot of it comes down to growing up.
Yeah, that's for sure true. So what are the more specific sort of challenges that you notice, maybe for dads particularly, maybe some of them are just for parents, you know, around this space? Like, when you compartmentalize it in that way that you described, what kind of tensions and problems does that create? And how do you uncompartmentalize it? Because what you're saying makes sense, you know, hey, it's just the same thing. But knowing that and actually implementing it in your life are sometimes different things. So talk us a little bit through, how would this look in reality?
So some of the feelings that I used to feel. So a lot of what I'm my avatar, and the person that I'm speaking to is also the version that I was 6 years ago. And a lot of what I felt was, when I was home, I was thinking about work. And when I was at work, I was thinking about home.
Yeah.
And often that's the very first feeling that something's out of balance. Like, if that just deeply resonated, like, yeah, I'm always at home and I'm always thinking about the emails at work. And when I'm always at work, I'm always thinking about the laundry I forgot to switch. If that happens, then you have this misbalance that your brain can't be in two places at once. But it's that idea that you need to have more of an integrated idea. And a lot of it starts with the door to your home. That for me, the doorway to my home was actually the scariest thing I walked through every day. Everything at work happened, no matter what happened, it was all pretty calm and normal. But the door to my home was kind of like this transition into this person that I didn't really know how to be, because all my mind and all my information was applied to work. Like, I knew who I was at work. I knew how the systems work. I knew how to coordinate action. All of that made sense. But when I crossed the door threshold to my home, there I felt lost. I felt like I don't know what to do. I felt like I wasn't, like, even just looking at my daughters, there was a significant moment maybe when I think I was 30, that looking into her eyes and being like, how can I lead you into your life if I can barely lead myself into mine? That was a pit that I was in when I turned 30. And in that moment, I was in a real pit, because a thought that was going through my head was like, I think I'm going to finish my life and no one's going to care that I was here. I really felt like that insignificant at home, because I didn't know who I was. And I was like, I am not capable of helping you become an adult, because I barely feel like an adult. Going back to growing up, that thought was rooted in still myself being an immature person that hadn't really thought through the different things that he's done in life and where I want to go and who I want to become. So going back to your action, the best place to start with intention is that transition through the door. I'm convinced it's a clear transition when you walk through the door, just like when you walk into a meeting, when you walk through the door at your work, you start a process of unpacking and starting to think about what you want to do. And so having a plan right from the get-go when you walk through the door, whether you're a dad or a wife, whoever is the breadwinner, one of the easiest switches that you can get to is recognizing the shift in your priorities. That many men and women focus on the priorities, and work often gets that bigger focus. It's just the way that our Western culture is wired, for better or for worse. But the part that we don't recognize as a married couple is the commitment to our husband and wife is the one that's going to go to the end of our days. Like, until we're 6 feet under, that commitment is going to outweigh every other. It's going to outweigh our kids, outweigh our mortgage, outweigh our car payment, outweigh every other thing that you do. But we really ever make that switch to actually make that the most important part of our life. So an easy thing to do when you walk through the door, even maybe if your kids are often greeting you at the door, which is really good because they're like excited to see you, they're excited to see you as a dad, like, give them a little bit of a nudge and walk to your wife and give her a kiss first. this was the lesson I learned from my podcast when I was interviewing military dads. And he's like, I make sure my kids understand that my wife is number one and you're number two. And I do that by walking through the door and giving her a kiss first. And then I acknowledge the kids. And even that just small little switch re-acknowledges that, yes, she is the priority in my life that matters more than anything. And a lot of that just comes by having communication, having understanding, and walking through the door with a different intention than you do, like, instead of sitting in your car or checking your email, be thinking about, how do I calm down? How do I get ready for the energy that is on the other side of that door? And how do I just kind of, maybe it's chaos, and like, whenever I have chaos, I always like, I just start laughing. Because when I laugh, I'm like, is this really what fatherhood is about? Like, really, this is just like, the house is burning down with emotions right now. I just laugh about it because, I mean, it's not that serious. In 10 minutes, it's going to be back to normal and it's all going to be over. So for me to like attach to that energy, that's where I make the mistake, is because when you don't grow up, you get attachment to these energies and emotions. And then next thing you know, you might walk through the door and start yelling because the kids start driving you nuts right away. If you walk through that door with the intention of like, yeah, it's going to be chaos, but I'm going to love it because this is my life and my wife and I have created this family and I love every bit of it. To me, the best place to start is right when you walk through that door.
Yeah, I can see the power of that. And again, there's a lot that you've shared in these stories, so I want to kind of highlight a little bit. And there's a few things. So one I'm hearing is intentionality. I'm also hearing the difference between these two spaces. Like sometimes, you know, you mentioned before, you got to lead in both spaces, but the context can be really almost like culturally different, especially when your kids are young, right? I think it does change. I can feel it getting saner and saner in my household as my kids get older. But
just as it gets saner, then that's when the real rebellious teenagers, yeah, as I've heard, kick right in. And then that's the opposite. You're in some like eye of the storm.
I'm in the golden period in between just now. But yeah, certainly like that shift in environment. And I guess there's a way in which life is either happening to you or, you know, you're happening with it. And what I can hear is that by creating that intentional shift when you get to the door, you can actually be ready for the environment you're coming into and kind of co-creating that environment. And then when you speak about acknowledging your partner first, like the other adult in the relationship, it really does create a sense of partnership, literally, just like you would consider yourself partnered with your team members at work. So I can see the power of that. And one thing I've noticed with my kids is that, you know, you would think that you're like rejecting the kids if you do that, but it's quite the opposite. My kids really love when my partner says anything nice towards me. They feel really proud of their mom. You know, like if anyone calls me beautiful, they're just like, yeah, my mom is so beautiful. If anyone said like I'm smart, they're like, yeah, that's my mom, she's so smart. Like kids, they actually, you would think they would feel rejected, but my experience from that kind of thing is it's the opposite. They actually feel really like secure and kind of proud when their parents are working together and supporting each other. So
I remember in my early part of my story, the one thing that I was fearful of when I turned 30 was talking to people. And someone gave me a really powerful question.
I find that surprising. Can I just
pause? Exactly. Yeah, that's
pause for that. You were afraid of what?
I was afraid to talking to people. This idea of who I am, like, is 6 years ago, I would have rather probably painted a drywall the entire room.
Wow.
And so when I turned 30, someone gave me this question. If I wanted a result in my life I've never had, I needed to do something I've never done. And it was a pretty simple answer when I came to that. I was like, I don't have a lot of friends. And I was like, okay, what do I have never done? I was like, okay, well, I don't talk to people. Every person I would talk to was that high school girl that said no. And I was like, well, that's a dumb thought because that doesn't make any sense. Not every person I talked to is that high school girl that I would say no, but I didn't really speak it out loud and like put thought to it and rational thought to it. So I was like, okay, so how do I fix this? And so there was always dads at the park. And I was like, you know what? They probably just want to play with their kids. They had a long day like I did. They don't want to say hello. And then one day I just said, screw it. And I said, hello. Turns out we were both just playing chicken, waiting for each other to go first. Because I kept doing this. And I'm like, every dad wants to talk to me at the park. Like, this was something we naturally wanted to do. And I was just sitting, we were both scared in this point. I just had to go first, going back to what I said earlier. And I remember there's one dad, and he's waiting for his son to play football next door, and we were on the playground with our kids. And his dad comes up, or his son comes up after we were done, and I complimented his dad in front of the son. I was like, hey, you've got a really cool dad. That son lit up like a Christmas tree. I've never seen that dad or his son again, but like to me, what you just spoke to is when you provide those compliments and when you provide them even from a different family and you're just like, you've got a really cool dad or a mom. Like kids, like, yeah, I'm glad someone else sees this hero in the same way that I do. Like that's the kind of thought that we want to think of. And you mentioned experiences, and I want to go there real quick, that the other part that relates to business and home is when you have your resume is your list of experiences. It makes you qualified to solve problems at this business. Your resume in your life, childhood, whatever you grew up in, whatever mess you have, or whether you have a good family or a good bad upbringing, it doesn't really matter. Your story, your little lessons that you learned along the way, those are actually some of the best teaching tools for your kids. And I can't tell you, I just open up little windows of like boot camp for my daughter or any other little story. And the kids are like, right in me, like, hey, tell us more. And it's initially you don't think of using those, but they're actually great, great teaching tools. And I've actually been having this thought that one of the biggest disservices we can do to our kids is that when our day is done on this earth and they're at our funeral and one of our friends shows up and shares a story of us, and if that's the first time they realize who dad was, we missed the mark. Or mom. Like, we want our kids to know who we are. And they're going to have a thought like, why didn't my dad tell me that story? That would have been a great story to hear from my dad. Why didn't he give me the gift of hearing it? Like, to me, that, like, you want to avoid that type of mindset, but you have to be present. You have to be intentional. You have to open your life up with curiosity and vulnerability and share your scars. Like, because then you can help them understand, like, oh, man, there's an issue over here that I want to avoid. And my dad learned that lesson for me, so I don't have to relearn it again. So many dads and parents close ourselves off from this, and we think that it's just a matter of keeping these kids alive and getting them to 18. No, there is so much different. It's the same thing at work. A leader doesn't just close himself off, or a good leader doesn't close himself off from the team. No, he's in there sharing what he knows. He's helping them with things that he's learned. The exact same thing applies to parents and experiences.
Yeah, it's very powerful. So if there were a leader who was listening to this and was resonating with what you're saying and thinking, okay, you know, I would like some help to actually integrate these areas, to lead better at home, to make sure that my kids don't miss out on knowing who I am. I love how you said that. What would the process be? Where would they start?
Well, they can go to bencloy.com, and I have a program there called It's Time to Come Home, which it's a program designed from my life and shortcutting the 8 years that it took me to figure out this process and shortcutting it into 8 weeks. So that is the best way to figure this out. The second best way is begin by sharing. I've always said that when I am in a position of leadership of like a CEO or executive or wherever it may be, or if I'm ever talking to a military unit, the one thing I'm going to lead with is my worst dad story. I'm going to go into the closet. I'm going to find the moment that I felt the most ineligible to be called dad moment, and I'm going to share it to everybody. And it's going to do a couple different things. One, it's going to prove that I didn't explode, because vulnerability is something that we all think we're going to explode, and there's going to be anxiety on the wall when we do share it. And I want to provide a safe place that, like, the leader of our company just shared his worst moment, and he's still there. The second point I want to do by doing that is showing that family matters. That, like, I realize that while you're here serving our mission and our focus, you still have a family that counts on you when you go home. I never want you to feel that that doesn't matter. And I'm doing that by sharing my worst moment, because what I do here as your CEO, I do for my family as well. And I've grown through that worst moment, and this is where I've gotten it. I want us to all grow as a family here at work and at home. And so for, to me, the best thing to do for any dad that's stuck or just wants to find a connection, find a friend, and just start talking. In this moment where, depending on where if you think of it as a sliding scale of like how much of this is resonating, maybe you're at the point where maybe you're even at the far spectrum where you might be hiding at work because you're afraid of going home. If that is you, or you're whether you're in the middle, one of the biggest things that I learned by talking to dads at the park is that for millennia, we lived life in communities. We never had to do it all alone. We had people ahead of us and we had people behind us. Not one person had all the answers. It's just like business. We don't expect the CEO to have all the answers. He has a team of people that has the answers. That same idea applies to ourselves and friends. And friends become the mirror for the value that you can't see. So if you don't feel like a good dad, if you can't see yourself walking to that door and doing the different things that I talked about, a friend could actually be that mirror for you to pull that out. That's what friends did for me. All of the things that, like, realizing, like, being able to talk and recognizing my story, the power of my story, that all came because I started sharing it in little micro moments. And they're like, man, Ben, your words are really powerful. And the way you put them together really connects emotions that I didn't even know I had. I've told that friend story to a group of dads, and a dad started crying before he even said hello afterwards because I accessed an emotion he wasn't even feeling. So friends is one of the best places to get that connection. And if friends sounds like something you really want to start, I also have a free audio course at freedadcourse.com. And it's 10 or it's five lessons, 10 minutes each about how you create more friendships in your life. Because to me, friendships is one of those easy gateway doors into a more fulfilled life in all the areas. Like, if you feel stuck, a friend can be that person that reaches into your fog that you feel and pulls you forward and gets you going. And you need friends, and we were never wired to do life alone. And that's one of the fundamental things that I learned early on is, like, I'm not supposed to have all the answers. I'm not supposed to be the guy that figures everything out. That's not how we are wired as people and communities. We all did it together. There's a reason why people say it takes a tribe to, or a tribe to raise a family, or a community to raise a family. Because it's true. It takes a herd to do all that stuff. Like, you need all that stuff to get there, and you're not supposed to do it alone.
Yeah, that's powerful. Fantastic. Wow. So there's a lot. It sounds like there's a lot of resources here that you have from It's Time to Come Home. Now, you mentioned that's like an 8-week program. Is that working with you, or it's more like a home study thing, or how does it?
It's a combination. So I have different stuff where I delivered content and topics and videos to the coachee. Yeah. And then it's also weekly coaching where we're unpacking what you're learning and then trying to move yourself forward. So it's built on, like, a couple of the first weeks is like, the first thing you have to do is you got to figure out where you are. I always relate it to, here in the United States, there's different waysides next to the interstate. There's always a map with a pin that says you are here. That's what the first step is. Because oftentimes what dads really don't know is, like, they've been running on repeat, because consumerism in Australia and in the United States both requires us to run on this pattern. We also don't even know where that pattern's leading us. So first step is figuring out where you are. And then the step is really figuring out what's facilitating that pattern and can we interrupt it? And, like, what is really holding you back from walking through that door with intention? And a lot of times it could just be a story from their childhood. It could be an early story, maybe an issue or trauma with their parents that just prevents them from acknowledging that, like, I think I can do better. Sometimes it's something as simple as that. And then from there, we really start going into, like, legacy. Like, where do you really want your family to go when you come home and create this amazing connection with your family? What do you want to be known for after your family's gone, or when you're gone? What do you want your kids to be known for when they go out into the world? That starts with your legacy. And it just kind of unfolds there through the 8 weeks of my process of coming home as well. But it's a basic process that you just have to go through it and you start feeling more connected, because a lot of times it's the simple things that are holding us back, and you just need a coach to mirror back some of that stuff that, like, hey, you can look here, and there's, like, it's like having a flashlight or someone else hold the flashlight in your life and find the shadows that maybe you don't even know are there. And you're like, hey, where'd that come from? I didn't know that was there. And then you're like, oh yeah, that makes sense, because I've been walking by that every day and tripping on it. Now I know why.
Right. Beautiful. It sounds really powerful. And, yeah, and so does the Free Dad course and working with you. So, you know, it's a pity I'm not a dad, but it sounds great. So one of the things I wanted to ask, and I know we'll wrap up soon, but I think it's important to think about, and we were speaking about legacy. And one of the little, I don't know, an issue that I have around leadership, when we look at society, I think our political, our business leadership, it does tend towards short-term thinking. And if you're lucky, like, you know, you're with a good coach or something, you might think about where you want to be at the end of your life, or even what's the legacy you want to leave for your kids. I was really inspired by this concept from the Iroquois Confederacy of seven generations thinking. And it was about, like, making decisions today that would benefit for seven generations to come. And depending on how old the generation is, that's, I don't know, 150 to 250 years. You know, it's like, wow, it's kind of mind-blowing to think about. But our decisions today do have an impact right into the future. It's like, if you think about those paths, you know, like diverging paths, and it's like that you know, they may be, they go on different angles, and it may be only that there is only a centimeter difference between choice A and choice B at the first point. But if you follow that down the line, 10 years later, there's 3 meters difference there. And if you come further on, it's like a really different future. And so it's something I believe in and I want us all to think about. So when you start to think about this work you're doing now with dads, with leaders, helping to create this connection with emotion, with authenticity, what would you hope that your impact and the impact of this work could be like beyond your kids' lifetime, maybe even 7 generations from now?
I love the idea of the 7 generations, and I haven't heard it said that particular way, but I have given this thought. Because what I learned when I had with my military dad podcast is military dads, especially the military veterans in the U.S., make 7% of the population. So 7% of the population has a worldview that only 7% have. And if we as military dads come home and can give just a little bit of that wisdom and depth to the world, our kids are going to be more capable. Like I've always said, I don't want my kids to have a better life. I want my kids to be more capable in life. And your depth and wisdom can be a huge thing there. And when you come home to your kids and be intentional and help them explore their own personality, you're giving them a gift to understand where they fit into the world. And I'm a big believer that you can't figure that out just going to school for 12 years or even just adding on college to that. You need to get outside your life in order to figure out how you fit into it. And so a dad coming home to me means the idea is possible that a child goes out into the world that understands her and or his unique gifts and how they can fit into the world to make it a better place. And if you start rippling that idea where a dad or a mom can go out there and like help their child understand where they're meant to fit into the world, not by like pushing them somewhere, but just giving them experiences, taking them to different places, take them to different countries, understand that there's just not one way to live life. And often we just settle in life to the one view we've had our entire life. And we often feel, I mean, I've just settled and I felt stuck and I felt like this isn't where I meant to be. Had I been more exposed to different things, I might have understood the world differently a lot earlier. And I wish I would have had that. So coming home as a dad to me is this idea of not just making impact in your kid's life, but your kids going out in the world and then making a generational impact like you're talking about. Like my kid goes out in the world and makes it a better place, they're probably going to touch like 1 million lives over their time. And if that keeps rippling, it's just going to be that much deeper. There's an idea within, I wrote a blog post on this that called, and it came from the movie Coco that Disney did about the Day of the Dead in Mexico. And it's this basic idea that we're only forgotten when people no longer remember our name. And if you think of the people that you do remember, the names from 100, 200 years ago, they did something unique and that created this ripple. Your kids are that ripple. If you can create an adult that goes out in the world with so much ambition and curiosity and hope to go out in the world and be brave enough to change it, your name will be remembered and your legacy will never be forgotten. And you will be able to do something 7 generations in the future. And you could be some of the 7 generations from now, they could be looking back and you're like, yeah, this last name represented a shift in society in this particular category that this dad came home to his kids and they figured out how they could go out in the world and make it better.
Yeah, beautiful. I love hearing your vision. Thank you so much. You've shared so many gems of wisdom here, Ben. And on top of that, I can really feel you practicing what you preach. You know, like your story in many ways speaks for itself. Your willingness to share about your life experience, including the difficult parts, with such openness and confidence are really inspiring. And that sense of connection that you have with your own emotions is so important. And as you know, and as you've spoken about, especially for men, it's so, so important. Interestingly, I was looking at statistics recently here in Australia for domestic and family violence, which is something that's been a little bit in our public attention recently. Good that it's in public attention, not good it's happening, but it's shocking. It's like 30 women a week are injured through domestic violence and one woman a week is dying from it. But they were also showing the statistics that there's one man a day in Australia who is committing suicide. And the chief police of Victoria, in the state of Victoria, was saying if we want to change these statistics at a national level, we really need to start at the schools. And what we know is we need young men to be able to connect with their heart, with their feelings, with their emotions, to feel safe and confident to do so. And we need young women to be able to connect with their boundaries and their will and their assertiveness and feel safe and confident to do so, to say no, basically, and to say, I'm not standing for that behavior, no. And, you know, just if that gives a little bit of a sense of the depth of how important the work that you're doing is, and that the more leaders that you can help to lead with empathy and compassion, both at home and at work, you know, not only will it help their own mental health and well-being, but it really does have a ripple effect to all the men and women, but, you know, especially the men who are looking up to them and saying, well, what does leadership look like? And if it looks like where you can actually be vulnerable, you can have emotions, you can share them, and that actually makes you a stronger and better leader, not a worse and weaker one. I think that that at its core is life-saving, and I'm just really, really commend you for this work.
There's a couple points I want to highlight there. There was one where you talked about the school, and I wholeheartedly agree, and it actually goes back to friendships again. When I first had this idea of friends and I started talking about it, I'm like, this is like 101 stuff. Like, there's no way this stuff is actually valuable. Like, everybody knows this stuff. What you don't realize with your own story until when you start exercising it, sharing it, is you realize that that's just a BS thought you have in your head. And it is valuable. I gave a speech to a group of high school teachers last summer. And in the United States, there's kind of this three-word buzzword within what you're talking about, social emotional learning. All the districts are focusing on it, and they got entire curriculums. It's almost like a math curriculum. We get a worksheet every night with my son about something they're talking about. And it's all what you just talked about, the emotions, identifying them, how to work through them, understanding they're not permanent, they're just temporary. And I gave this speech to the teachers of how a student in high school that has three close friends more and is versus, like, say, the 25 friends or more popular has just three close friends is more likely to be more socially stable at the age of 25 than someone who has an abundant amount of friends. That, like, we just need human connection. Like, to me, it's wired into our soul. It's wired into who we are, our DNA, our connection to humanity. But we don't understand the importance of it, so we don't talk about it. And in this group of teachers that I was talking to, they actually barely even knew each other's names. Like, they didn't even have a very good sense of community within the teachers. Like, there's a new teacher here that's struggling somewhere, and she needs a lifeline. And if you don't know her name, you don't know her struggles, she's not going to feel like it's okay to share it. And that's going to make her, like, feel like she's not welcome and just kind of defeat in her own world. Like, what you're talking about there is so important, and friendships are a key aspect of that. The other angle of why everything that I've talked about is really important for moms and dads, from the father perspective, because that's what I am, that's where I'll talk. We are the example that our kids go out in the world to model. The best example for our son is he will use my model of how I led my life to set the bar. He will always try to rise above my bar wherever it's set. If I set the bar low, he's going to set the bar low. And so if I don't like where he's headed, I really only have, again, looking at self-leadership. If I didn't lead myself well, he's not going to lead himself well either. If I went to the gym regularly when he was growing up and fitness was something he saw in my life every day, he's going to think that it's perfectly okay to go to the gym every day. And that's, I need something in my life like that every day. Because I got to connect with dad because we used to do it together and we go running during the summer. Those are things that he's going to hang on to. The daughters is even more important. So when you connect it to domestic dispute, it's really important here. When your daughter goes out in the world, she's going to use her father as the example of what a man looks like. How did he love my mom? What were the examples of how he showed affection? Did he show me affection? Was he okay talking about his emotions to me? Did he give me a hug? Did he tell me he loved me? Those are the examples that she's going to go out in the world to find. And I don't know if it's how connected to you this idea works in Australia, but here there's a joke that the dad with a shotgun at the door is something that's a very common, like, methodology within having a teenage daughter dating. To me, the dad with a shotgun is one that set the bar low. And so if you don't want to worry about what kind of daughter or what kind of man your daughter brings home, set the bar high, because she'll always come to the conclusion, that guy's not my dad. and kick him to the curb, but naturally, because she knows what that felt like. I am my daughter's first love, and she will compare every other love to the love that I am. And if we don't show up in our daughter's life, they will go find someone to fill that void. They're wired to feel that. And if it doesn't come from their father first, they will find the first person to do it. And that's when you create all these different issues like teen pregnancy and just bad relationships and abusive relationships, because they have this yearning for connection and love from their father and it never showed up. So like what we're talking about today is leadership, but man, is it so deep when you get connected of like the ripples through time that you can really do with your family.
Absolutely. There's so much potential there. Ben, I feel like this is a good time for us to wrap up, but what I'd like to ask, and as I said, you've just shared so much wisdom. Is there any final thoughts that you just want to be saying as we complete this podcast?
There's one fundamental rule. This is one of my highest rules that I try to live by, is that one conversation will change your life. So we get conversation. People come into our life every day. Sometimes we say hello, sometimes we don't. Sometimes we say hello and we brush them off. Every time you have an opportunity to connect with someone, that person could change your life forever. Whether it be this episode and you just heard it and what I shared changed your life, the opportunity to change your life is right on the other side of hello. So whatever you're feeling, whatever gap you are in life, whatever you're looking to solve, a single hello right on the other side of that conversation with a well-pointed person could change how you see the world forever. Whether it be someone that's walked in your shoes and says, hey, it's going to be okay, I've been there. Just hang on for about another 2 weeks and you'll get out of it. Or whether it's someone that tells you that like, wow, I don't have to be miserable at work, I can enjoy my job. Like, what a refreshing feeling. That person just gave that person a gift that changed their world forever. Or some of the other crazy things that like, you learn just like, you do what and you make how much money doing this? Because so much of what we have is, and I'm sure it's a similar example in Australia, we just have a very insular view of what dreaming looks like. Sometimes we just aren't exposed to enough dreams, and we need a wider view of that. Yeah.
Yeah.
And so you are always one conversation away from changing your life, and you're going to miss 100% of those shots you don't take. So always say hello, whether it's an airplane, whether it's a grocery store, wherever it may be, whatever opportunity you have to practice, because there's going to be a day where it's going to happen and you're going to be like, where have you been my entire life? And all you got to do is say hello to it.
That's such beautiful advice. Thank you so much. I love it. So,
and you're podcasting, so you're in the right example. All you got to do is keep saying hello.
Yay. Great. So folks, we can connect with Ben's work on It's Time to Come Home is at your website, which is?
BenKalloy.com is where all that's connected.
Ben Kalloy with a double L, KILLOY. And of course, the freedadcourse.com. Did I get that right?
Freedadcourse.com is where that course is at. And at BenKalloy.com, there's also a free 45-minute discovery call. If you feel stuck, if you just want to see what's possible when someone shines a flashlight in your life, it's there. It's open. I'm an open book, and I love helping other dads connect with the awesomeness that is dad.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Ben. Great to have you on the show.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you for listening to the Awakening Leadership Podcast. I'm your host, Yolana Shaw. If you'd like to share your thoughts, comments, or suggestions about the show, I'd love to hear from you. And it's easy to do. Visit www.awakening-leadership.com/podcast to view the show notes or send me a message. Finally, if you enjoyed this conversation, I would be so grateful if you would take a moment to review and subscribe so more people can find out about it and we can build this amazing leadership community. Till next time.